Good morning, everyone. The Tribal Affairs Committee will now come to order. The time is 8:03 a.m., Thursday, April 24th, 2025, in Capitol Room 106. Members present are Representative Schwanke, Representative Carrick, and myself, Chair Dybert. Let the record reflect that we are here and we're ready for a presentation. A quick reminder to please silence your cell phones. I would like to thank Jordan Nicholson, the Tribal Affairs Secretary from Rutgers, and Doug Bridges from Juneau LIO for staffing the committee today and keeping us going. So today we have two items on our agenda. First, we'll hear a presentation from the Chicoloon Tribal Police Department. After that, we will move on to House Bill 59 to hear public testimony on the bill. If time allows, we will conclude with questions from the committee regarding this bill, and let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Burke. To present on the Chicoloon Tribal Police Department, we have Donna Anthony, Chief of Police for the Chicoloon Native Village. Before Chief Anthony begins, I want to ask committee members to please hold any questions you may have until the end, since we have a lot to get through today. Good morning, Chief Anthony. Would you please state your name and affiliation for the record, and please join us and start your presentation.
Yes, ma'am. Willie Jan, my name is Donna Anthony, and I'm the Chief of Police with Chicoloon Police Department. And you want me to go ahead and start the presentation?
That would be great. Thank you for,
yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for being here this morning.
No problem. And I'll just take off the picture while I do the presentation here. And will you be turning it when I say next page?
Yes. You just say next slide, and then we could switch it.
No problem. Again, my name is Donna Anthony. Thank you so much. I am born and raised here in Alaska. I've had over 20 years of law enforcement experience. I am retired with the City of Palmer Police Department, and during my years with the City of Palmer, I spent 6 years with the Alaska State Trooper DEA Drug Task Force for the statewide task force, and I worked terrorism, drugs, and I was also on the SARS response team for money laundering. So thank you so much. And if we can go to the next slide.
And before you start the next slide, I just want the record to reflect that we've been joined by Representative Story.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, please.
And I'll probably have to go to my slide because I really can't see what you have. I apologize.
We are, it says Office on Violence Against Women.
Yes, ma'am. So thank you. So this, I am here today because of this grant, the Office of Violence Against Women's grant through the Department of Justice. So I wanted to share that. Next slide will show our agenda. I'm going to discuss the Chicoloon Tribal Police Department team, the purpose of the meeting, our mission, our vision, the history of Chicoloon Police Department, a discussion on VAWA 2022 and the jurisdictional map, establishing the tribal course before starting a police department, the process to hire and start a tribal police department in the state of Alaska, and Chicoloon Police Department hiring process, the future of Alaska tribal law enforcement, and the course of action, and then we're asking to be recognized by the Alaska Police Standard Council. And if we can go to the next slide, I wanted to let you see some photos of some of our officers and our staff. We have a good team. Myself as the police chief, we have Lieutenant Stulo. We just had recent promotions, so we now have a Sergeant Detective, Sergeant Detective Howard, and then we have a Patrol Sergeant, Todd Herring, and then we have a victim specialist, which is Terry Larson. And if you can go to the next slide, we also have a program manager, Brett, and we also have a police administrator, Dana. So currently we have two of our new officers at the Fairbanks Police Academy. One's gonna be hired for Chicoloon, and the other one will be assigned to the Dot Lake Village. And we are currently hiring right now three more officers. Two will be for Chitna, and one will be for Port Hyden. These officers will, we're in the process of hiring them now, and they'll be going to the academy in New Mexico at FLETC for the U.S. Indian Academy, since that'll be the next academy coming up. And if you can move to the next slide.
Thank you, Chief.
So the
Yes, ma'am. Before we start the next slide, thank you, Chief Anthony. Just let the record reflect, we've been joined by Representative Moore.
Thank you, ma'am. So the purpose of the meeting is about Chicoutimi Tribal Police Department and what this model looks like for the state of Alaska, since this is a new model that Alaska has not seen. If you can go to the next slide. Our mission is to uphold tribal, state, and federal laws. It's to protect the life and property and promote, preserve peace within our communities through a safe, humane, and effective law enforcement. The values of the tribe are big. We are big on professionalism, integrity, fairness, timeliness, high morals and ethical conduct, and we build peace not only through law enforcement, but through fostering through public trust, through proactive community engagement. When I talk about tribal, we want to make sure you understand it is community. The tribe is very involved with the community. So next slide. You'll see our tribes will attend events. It could be the powwows. It could be going to the schools with the kids. So the officers are very involved. The photo you see here, this was during a shop with a cop here in Wasilla. And these are with some of our tribal citizens. Our vision is to enhance tribal public safety and justice in Alaska. And what we're working right now is expanding and training the regional tribal court system. What you see right now is BIA is giving funding to several tribes to build their court systems. For us at Chicoutimi, and I've got Phil on here, he's the director for our courts, but we are working on wellness programs. And not only that, the courts are working with other villages with their criminal cases since they don't have their courts set up. Our courts have tribal trained law judges, and we also have the first in the state for our tribal criminal codes. Going on, we are trying to expand our tribal police department, and as we do this presentation throughout Alaska, many tribes want their own police department, but you have to have a court system for your civil, domestic, and criminal codes. And so we use this presentation to help guide them on the process of building those steps to get to a police department. And by doing this, we are mentoring them and helping them to go through this process. For us, we are working on a dispatch contract right now with the City of Palmer Police Department to dispatch for all of our posts. And then we are also building our new police department. And with that police department, we will be adding Starlink as a backup communications center. We noticed throughout the state of Alaska, a lot of the 911 systems are going down, and so we are going to try to do Starlink to try to keep our communications running. Then we've got the full tribal access program, and I don't know if you've heard of this, but this is through DOJ, and we are the first to have the full tribal access program with the machine in our facility. When we do background checks in the past, we would do fingerprints and send it to the state, and it would take several weeks to get a background check. Now, when we do fingerprints, it's within minutes we get the results back from FBI. It's directly linked to FBI. Next slide, please.
Chief Anthony, just to let the record reflect, we've been joined by Representative Underwood at 8:09.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. All right, so now we're talking about enhancing tribal public safety and justice in Alaska. So what does that look like? Our officers have been working with the commissioner for the public safety, which is, he's been fantastic with us. All of our officers have done the APSIN training, which is the Alaska Public Safety Information Network. Since we have the tribal access program, we already have the security clearance through DOJ. And so since we are recognized as a federally recognized tribal police department, we now have APSIN, so we can run both. We want to make sure that we strengthen our partnerships with key agencies. We work hand in hand with BIA, we're working really well with the state troopers, and that we have a new U.S. attorney, so we're getting to know him. And we work with our local departments here, such as Palmer Police and the Wasilla Police Department. Our future is to build a tribal detention facility, such as our courts, youth courts, drug rehab programs, and more to work with our Alaska Native people in the state of Alaska. We know there's a high number of Alaska Natives in the jails, and a lot of times they're being recruited by the Native Brotherhood gangs, and I think if we use our own detention facility and have programs and elders and bring in the values back into the courts, and this would be at a misdemeanor level, we can do more, and hopefully they don't come back. We want to catch them at the beginning of the crimes, mentor them, and work with them through some of the problems that they're dealing with, and hopefully they don't come back to jail. The next thing we're looking at is becoming a training center for all tribes in Alaska. The reason why we are looking at this, as we have kind of paved the way with our tribal courts and our tribal police, many tribes want to do what we're doing, and we want to make sure we set a standard. And throughout the U.S., there are 574 tribes. Here in Alaska, we have 229 tribes. So we're at that beginning phase, and we're wanting to be good stewards and good trainers with all the tribes. So by doing that, we would work on courts, training for dispatch, police, victim advocates, probation, and even judicial officers serving DVPOs. Our main focus is mentoring our youth. They need something to do, so we're trying to empower our youth with legal education and leadership skills. If you can go to the next slide, please. So here is some of the history and setbacks of the Chicklin Tribal Police Department. I've been with Chicklin for 4 years. I retired and I was asked to come back and help build this police department. And through the process, I learned the history. So Chicklin Police Department has been around since the 1980s. And back then they were sending their officers to the Fairbanks and the Sitka Police Academy. They were certified, they were able to arrest and take them to, here would be Matsu pretrial. The setback they had was in Alaska Police Standard Council decided not to recognize tribal police with state authority following a letter that was issued in 2020. So this changed a lot of things in how we had to look and how to operate. This decision hindered the Chicklin Tribal Police Department with not having state authority. So currently, I'll continue. Go ahead and go to the next slide, please. So knowing there was some history when I walked in, I didn't know how much history, to be honest with you. I was attending meetings with the Sutton Council, Community Council meeting, Chicklin Community Council meeting, and letting them know kind of what we were working on with the new VAWA 2020. Many have never heard of VAWA 2020. So we asked the Alaska Native Justice Center to come into the Sutton community and explain what laws were passed by Congress and explaining everything. Didn't seem the community liked that very well, and they reached out to George Rauscher, and there was this, it came pretty, I'd say, heated at this council meeting, and then we would go to the Chicklin Community Council, which we have no issues up there. The community has been great, and the community in Sutton has been phenomenal. It is just the Sutton Community Council from the past, which I have nothing to do with, but we were trying to educate them on VAWA and that Alaska tribes share concurrent jurisdiction with state and federal partners. Knowing that, we were working with Department of Law and with our attorneys, and we were working on an MOA for special commission. And before they did the special commission, as the attorneys worked on everything, we wanted to make sure we went out to the community and let them know. We had a meeting at the Sutton Community Council, and it still was not taken well, and I felt bad for the troopers trying to explain how they are shorthanded and could use the help. And eventually, several people were making phone calls, and when I made the request of the letters sent to the Alaska State Troopers, they had a total of 38 letters that were against what we were doing. And when you look at the state of Alaska and the problems that we have in the state of Alaska with Alaska Native people, sexual assaults, domestic violence, and human trafficking, I was surprised that it was turned down. When I spoke to the commissioner, his main concern was our officer safety. There were some people in that community that said even if we had state commission, they would probably assault an officer, and that was his concern. And I did agree with him. At that point, it was pretty heated. So go ahead and go to the next page. So what does VAWA 2022 do for Alaska tribes? Basically, most of the things that you see says the laws defined territorial jurisdiction of Alaska tribes. Instead of the usual reference as Indian country, this changed it to Alaska tribes jurisdiction as villages. So you'll see Indian country and Alaska Native villages, and that helps give us more authority. And if you go to the next slide, this is our 2020 census Alaska Native Village statistical area. So you look at the first map, you'll see our area covers into the city of Palmer, and you see the white side. That's our whole area. It's the size of Connecticut. It's a very large area. And what we see in our community, even though we have a small tribal population, just with Chicklew members, but within the Matsu borough, we could be up to 26,000 tribal members within the community. In addition, our courts are taking cases for tribal members within our community, but assigned to other village, they're assigned to other villages, and so they're doing MOAs for crimes in our area, or if they need cases heard in our area, but they may not be our member, but they're still going through our tribal courts. I just want to make sure we understand that. Yeah, we may have a small number of tribes for Chicklew, but there are many tribal citizens within the Matsu borough. All right, next slide, please. My understanding, Rick did a presentation on VAWA 2020 last week, and under Section 813, this expands the tribal jurisdiction over non-Native perpetrators of violent crimes. This also enhanced tribal sovereignty and law enforcement coordination. We were seeing in the lower 48, you've got tribes with reservations, and Alaska doesn't have reservations, but if somebody did a crime outside the reservation, they can run onto the reservation, and then the sheriff's department could not go on the reservation, vice versa. What we see in the lower 48 now, they do commissions for both tribal and the sheriff's department, and they work together to make sure they can't hide from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And this just helps us in Alaska as well, even though we share concurrent jurisdiction. Next slide, please. So our process to hire and start a tribal police department, I know in Alaska you hear there are tribal police departments. They are not a full tribal police department unless they have obtained an ORI number from FBI. That is how we become a federally recognized tribal police department. This is designated through the Department of Justice, which our police department has. We are the first police department in the state that's tribal, that is not a reservation like Metlakatla, to have this. Next step, you have to have and develop your policies and procedures and your standing operating procedures, which is such as your daily operations, your incident response, evidence handling, and reporting. We have all this with the help of Palmer Police Department. We revamped all of our policies and our procedures and SOPs. Next slide, please. Evidence handling is huge. You'll see a lot of police departments, they are shut down because they're not handling their evidence properly, such as drug seizures and documentation. So our evidence is good. We have policy procedures for that. Establishing the dispatch center. We are working with, like I said, Palmer Police Department. And for us, we are taking the next level. For our patrol cars, we are adding Starlink into our patrol cars. We have the tablets from Department of Justice where we can do our report management. We can run taps. We can run anything in our patrol cars and be remote because we don't just do Chicklew. We also do Chitna and Dot Lake. So we're in some remote areas. And so we're making sure we have good comms because some of our radios with Alomar, when we get in certain areas, we have no phone or radio comms. So we've added Starlink to our fleet. Next slide, please. So in this picture here, you see on the right, this is the tribal access system. This is where we can do fingerprints and photos. We can do immediate background checks. Within minutes, we can have a background check compared to sending it through the state. When the state sends it to FBI, we have a direct link to FBI. If we arrest anybody, everything's booked in right here and sent to FBI. It's really nice. We just got it. And then, as I told you before, all of our staff and officers have been trained under the Public Safety Information Network, APSIN, so we have both. The reason why we did both, when we were serving our domestic violence protective orders and we were entering them into NCIC, that's a national database that any officer will see that we serve this order. For law enforcement Alaska, they're using APSIN, and if they didn't hit like PF8 or PF9, they would not see the order in the national database. And so we want to make sure nothing is missed, so we have them using both at this time. Next slide, please. So the next thing we want is our MOAs. We have MOAs with the state troopers, Wasilla Police, Palmer Police, and the Matsu Borough for EMS, so we can communicate and work together with comms. We have several MOAs currently right now with the village of Dot Lake, Fort Hyden, Eklutna, Chitna, Cape Alaska, and Tusik Bay. These are to use our courts and our police. Our courts actually have additional government-to-government agreements with other tribes working some of their domestic and civil cases. Next slide, please. So when I see their tribes trying to start a police department in the state of Alaska, I highly recommend that their chief of police at least has 10 years or more experience. I can tell you when I moved back here from the sheriff's department back to Alaska before I got with Palmer PD, I was taking a position in St. Mary's. I was acting police chief. So I came from a very large sheriff's department into St. Mary's, and the police chief that was running it left for 6 months, never met him. I'm acting police chief with no knowledge or experience, but I was blessed in to run this village. And thank goodness there was a VPSO to assist me for the 6 months. And as we were arresting people, we would put them downstairs, put a bar across the door, and then I'd fly to Bethel the next day. So I think we can work on a better standard of tribal police throughout the state of Alaska. So that would be a recommendation. And then as you continue on, just so you know what we do to be part of this standard, we follow Alaska Police Standards requirements. So we have currently right now we're hiring for Port Hyden and Chitna. We have probably about 15 applicants in right now. We will select the ones that have actually filled out the paperwork correctly. We'll do an ORA board. And when we do ORA board, we have our executive director, some directors, could be the chief of the tribe, and the tribe that we're hiring for that post will be part of the ORA board process as we ask a bunch of questions. And then we'll select certain people that have done well that we feel that will fit well within the community for the tribe, because that's like being invited into their family. Once they have passed the ORA board, they will go ahead and do the F3 form that's required by Alaska Police Standard Council. And we do the federal background adjudication. Once they pass that, they move on to the psychological evaluation. Go ahead and go to the next slide, please. And then they're required to do a physical exam. And then we do a polygraph as well. Some departments do not do polygraphs. We want to be held to that standard, especially with all the attention on us. All of our officers have gone through polygraph examination by now retired Commander Shane LaCroix with the Palmer Police Department. And then once all this is complete, we have to submit the applications to the U.S. Indian Academy or the University of Fairbanks to be accepted. And all the information is also sent to the Alaska Police Standard Council. So everything we're doing, we're sending to Alaska Police Standard Council so they know the training we're doing. We're just not recognized by the state. From there, the officers will attend a 16-week police academy, either in Fairbanks or the U.S. Indian Academy. If they go to the U.S. Indian Academy, that is free for us. And that's why I like sending them there, because it's just an airline ticket. Anything that is FLETC is free. We are grant-based. Everything we do is by COT grants or DOJ grants. So the officers I have at Fairbanks, that academy is going to cost me about $12,000 per recruit. If a recruit gets hurt or cannot pass, I lose that funding from that grant. So for me, if I send them to the U.S. Indian Academy at FLETC, if they get hurt, I can send them back. It's just costing me an airline ticket, and I save that $12,000. If I send them to Sitka, it's up to $15,000. So being grant-based, I have to be careful where I send them. And like I said, in New Mexico, it is a post-academy. So when they come back here, they'll still have to go do the two-week research in Sitka to get the Alaska Post certification. So those are the two routes that we have for getting our officers trained. Next slide, please. Once they are done with the police academy, they have to do the field training. I mean, just being graduating from the academy, you are not ready. There's so much still to learn as a new recruit, and we have an officer assigned with them. Alaska Police Standard requires 40 hours of FTO. We're going to be doing a month, and once we have more staff, I'd like to do day shift 1 month, swing shift 1 month, and our night shift 1 month. I'm getting hands-on training because it's so crucial here in Alaska, especially in the remote villages with the lack of backup and response. So that is our goal in the future. Next slide, please. Here's our breakdown. We have our courts. We have our law enforcement. We want to work on our tribal detention facility. We want to work with our state Alaska corrections, because if it's a non-native, needs to go to state or needs to go to federal detention facility. So basically what we're looking at is if we go to a call and it's a tribal citizen and it's a misdemeanor level, we will send it to our tribal courts. If it's a domestic violence with a native, non-native, and the suspect is non-native, we need to get them to the state court. Without this not being recognized by the state of Alaska hinders us, but we are currently now working with Department of Law, and they've been really good. If we have a case with Dot Lake, they'll set us up with the DA in Fairbanks. We are currently working with the DA in Palmer on a case, and since we share concurrent jurisdiction, this is very new. It'd be easier if we were recognized or we had commission, but we're taking it very slow and working with Department of Law on some of the cases we're dealing with. Next slide, please. This is a photo of the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in New Mexico. This is where Secret Service, this is where Border Patrol, they all do the training. It is a phenomenal facility. It's basically boot camp, and they're in the dorms, and food is provided, and lots of running and working out there. Next slide, please. You can read this here later. I know we don't have much time, but this is my comment on future of Alaska tribal law enforcement, basically working together. Next slide, please. So the course of action. So this tribal model that I'm discussing is not new. It's just new for Alaska. I've been down to Washington State, who is a PL-280 state. They recognize their tribal police. They go to the state academy. So they have tribal jurisdiction. They have state commission. And some of the departments have their BIA special law enforcement commission to work the federal crimes. So this is not a new process. And down in the lower 48, you have many tribes that have dual commissions with the sheriff's department and vice versa, so they can work together. So since this is a new model up here in Alaska, we want to make sure we are working well with our local, state, and tribal federal agencies and attending the meetings and finding a way to work together. Let's go to the next slide, please. And so we're asking, just to make things easier, for our legislators to really look at it. When you look at the statute, it's recognizing Alaska Railroad police officers, it's recognizing university police officers, and we're asking to be recognized with tribal police, long as we fit the same standard by Alaska Police Standard Council. Next slide, please. And why does it matter? One, we want that standard, we want the training, the accountability. We want the accountability to make sure officers are doing what they're supposed to do. And that brings in that public trust. And that's what's missing. Without the state supporting tribal police, we're going to have a public trust issue. So it's going to take time. It's going to take time to educate the community that what we can and cannot do, and that we do have a good working relationship with our local, state, and federal partners. Next slide, please. And I just touched this here that right now the statute does recognize Alaska Railroad Police, University Police, and we are asking to be recognized for tribal police, hitting that same standard. And if you can go to the next slide, this is Tulalip Police Department. We visited them. We visited Snohomish Police Department, Nisqually, and Spokane. And these are great departments working with local, state, and federal agencies. And I think Alaska can do the same thing. Next slide, please. And I think that will be it, because I want to leave it for questions. So thank you for your time, and I'm open for any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Chief Anthony. That was amazing. Thank you for your fast, very quick overview of Chicloon. It sounds like it is doing really well and has definitely a good start, and I just really appreciate you sharing all of the things that go into making a tribal police department. So I'll turn to the committee. I know that was a lot of information. Are there any thoughts or comments or questions? Chief Anthony, we have a question from Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Chief Anthony. Through the chair, I was just curious if the Alaska Police Standards Council had ever reversed its decision from February of 2020, and what does recognition by Alaska Police Standards Council do towards moving the goalpost, I guess, towards tribal policing?
Yeah, excellent question. So no, it has not been reversed. The reason being is because it's up to the legislators. You guys determine who is recognized. That's what I was advised back then. So if the legislators will recognize tribal police, it will be added, and then we will have state commission. We can work with our state and local partners.
Thank you. Yeah, we have follow-up on that from Representative Story, and then we have a question from Representative Underwood.
Thank you, Rep. Dybert. Through the chair, could you clarify your response about the legislature being the one to authorize it? Because my understanding from your presentation was the Police Standards Council in 2022 said it could not happen when it has been happening before. So I don't quite understand what did the legislature do to reverse some positions so I would be changed by the Police Standards Council.
Another very good question. So when I came on board with Chicklin after retiring from law enforcement, I was advised we didn't have state authority, and then I was advised by this letter. So I can send you the letter. But it looks like they did some research, and it should never have happened in the first place. And so they did a breakdown showing who's accepted and who's not, and tribal police are not accepted under the state statute.
Thank you for that
information. So I don't know how that came about, but there is a letter on that.
Yeah, if you could share the letter with the committee, and then we could pass that on to members. Chief Anthony.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for that. Representative Underwood.
Thank you, Chair Dybert. Through the chair, I was just curious, what have you heard as your biggest pushback from stakeholders, community members? Like, what's the biggest negative feedback for making this come to fruition and the biggest hurdles or obstacles that would need to be overcome, in your opinion?
Yes, ma'am, and this will just be my opinion. I, like I said, I've been doing law enforcement for over 20 years, and just because the word tribe is in front of it, I think the community is afraid that a tribal police is going to arrest a non-native and put them in a non-native jail. That is, I think it's just miscommunication, and I think the education needs to come from Department of Justice and the state of Alaska on if we do have state commission, only tribal members would go to the tribal detention facility, which would be a misdemeanor. Any non-natives would go straight to the district attorney's office or the U.S. attorney's office with the due process. So I think they think there's no due process, but there would be due process.
Yeah, I just a follow-up on that. Any thoughts or ideas on how to get across that message of public trust? That was actually one of my questions. Just the public trust on Representative Underwood's question. Any thoughts on that? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Like I said, the commissioner with the Alaska State Troopers, he was phenomenal. They sent Austin, their PIO, to Sutton to actually try to slowly launch that. We were getting special commission with some restrictions to slowly earn the public trust. I can tell you the community likes it. Many would not show up to the meeting because they didn't want to go to like a lynch mob kind of council meeting. But you also have Chicklin, that community wants it because there's no law enforcement out in that area. And we do have burglaries, lots of drug activity. I mean, I was in the drug unit. I can tell you there's so much drug activity out there, and it's killing me not to do a traffic stop on the highway knowing there's drug activity up and down in our areas. So my hands are tied, and the criminals know this. So it's just basically taking the time to say, we're looking at giving tribal police state commission, long as they follow exactly what Alaska Police Standard Council requires, because if we do anything wrong, then we're investigated. So I think they just need to know that there is a process, we could be investigated, and our certificates can be taken away just like any other police department. So it's just education.
Yeah, I think education is just the key. And just a follow-up, and then we have a question from Representative Schwanke. Do you ever present at AFN?
AFN has not, I don't think they're up to speed with the courts and the tribal police. We've been guest speakers at Tanana Chiefs, intertribal working groups, I've flown into other villages such as Tusik Bay, and they've had 8 other villages come in. So I'm being flown throughout the state talking about what we're doing in this model because you know as well as I do, many villages are begging for help with the crime that's occurring, the drugs, the human trafficking. We do have a problem. 40% of our state doesn't have law enforcement. And with the federal government giving us COP grants, this is just helping the state add law enforcement and not hurting the state budget. So this is why we should have a good partnership.
Thank you for that, Chief Anthony. Representative Schwanke.
Thank you, Chair Dybert, and thank you, Chief Anthony, for presenting this morning. So I live in Teslina, so I'm in between Chicoloon and Chitna, and I remember at least one of the meetings where I was asked locally by individuals to call into one of those meetings that I know you presented, and I know you did a good job of trying to be professional in bringing, you know, just the background and the basics to the community. And I understand that probably the biggest pushback from the Copper River region that I have heard really was the concern about highway stops. Chicoloon is right on the highway. So it's a very different geographic situation than fly out, very small communities and villages. I have a question for you on, I don't know what page it is, but you have a page and a map there where it says 2020 Census Alaska Native Village Statistical Areas, and it notes the Chicoloon Special Tribal Jurisdiction map. And I'm curious if you have MOUs with some of these other villages, including Dot Lake, also on the highway, and are there other maps that are available for us to look at that outline the other village statistical areas? I'm not familiar with those.
Yes, and I'm sure Rick could probably jump on here as well. But yeah, so Chitna has their special jurisdictional map as well. Same with Dot Lake. They're not as large as Chicoloon. Chicoloon and Kinnick are the largest tribal jurisdictional area maps. If you even have an iPhone, you can look at your iPhone map, and if you look at Chicoloon and size it down, you'll see a shaded area. That shows your tribal jurisdiction by Congress, so it's even on your iPhone. So you can go over to Dot Lake on your iPhone and then kind of zoom in and out, and you'll see the shaded area. That is the tribal jurisdiction.
Is there a place online? Sorry, follow-up.
Yeah, follow-up?
Yeah. And yeah, there is. Rick, do you have the link for that by chance or where they can go?
Let's see if Rick Garcia is on. If Rick, if you could hear me, if you could state your name and your affiliation for the record.
Yes. Good morning, Chair Dybert. My name is Rick Haskins Garcia. I am the Director of Law and Policy for the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center and also a tribal judge for the Chicoloon Native Village. The Alaska Native Statistical Area maps are completed and compiled by the U.S. Census Bureau, and so there is a link that we can share for each of the questions that the committee had regarding Dot Lake, regarding Chicoloon, and the other Native villages within Alaska, and we'll make sure we share that link with the committee once we're completed today.
Perfect. Another follow-up?
Follow-up?
So my next question has to do with the drug trafficking issue, and you touched on it, but didn't expand too much. And I guess I would just very much be interested in hearing about any sort of partnerships that you have with the Alaska State Troopers on doing anything and everything to address drug trafficking. I know it comes right through the Chicoloon area a lot to the Copper River region, down to Valdez, and fentanyl's an unbelievably unfortunate thing that affects the entire state and many of our villages. So, just kind of any collaboration insights that you can offer us on that front would be helpful.
Yes, ma'am. Just so you know my background, so I was with the Alaska State Trooper DEA Drug Task Force for 6 years. So I've been all over the state working drug operations and working undercover buying drugs. So since I've retired and have come back, I'm going to say over the years, I think Alaska is worse with the drug problem, especially with fentanyl. It is driving me crazy to see. I know we've got the drugs in our community. We've got people overdosing on fentanyl. We've got meth in our community, and I'm not able to do traffic stops on a federal highway. Actually, I could, but we're trying not to upset the public. If these guys are going to a police academy, doing everything Alaska Police Standard requires, why are we not working together and stopping the drug problem in this state? We are currently working with trying to set up a meeting with Postal Service and working with DEA. With Tusik Bay, it is a big issue in Tusik. We were there for a town hall meeting. Troopers were there as well. Their post office was broken twice. It's a very small post office. for drug dealers taking their drugs from the post office, and nothing was done. The elders spoke out, which normally they do not. They are afraid of these drug dealers. The drug dealers are making threats to the elders, and recently now to the tribal police officers. They do not have full training. We're going to mentor them for full tribal police training and sending them to the academy. But in the meantime, knowing that this is escalating in Tusik Bay and the other Lincoln villages, I'm asking for a meeting with the U.S. Postal, with DEA, and I've asked AST so we can all work together to stop the drug problem that's occurring in Tusik Bay and the other villages, because it is out of control and they're begging for help.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's very important.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, Chief Anthony.
If I could add one more thing, without state recognition, it's very difficult. So even though I could work this case all day long with my background and training experience, but without the state recognizing the tribal police, I have to wait for an agent with either DEA or postal or state troopers to be there to hold our hand to work this case, because we don't have state authority. So it's hindering the process of what we need to do in the state.
Thank you for that, Chief Anthony. That's very helpful in understanding issues affecting Alaskans, and I really appreciate that. It helps us in our decision-making here in Juneau. We have a question or comment from Representative Story.
Yes, thank you, Chief Anthony. Through the chair, you had spoken about how you are completely grant-funded. And again, this could just be clear, if you could clarify that it's accurate. And to me, that is concerning because I know how grants can be. So if you could give me a history of how long these grants have been happening and your confidence that they will continue to happen. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I love the questions. Very good questions. So Chicoloon Police Department, we have several grants. They are Department of Justice, DOJ grants, just like any local police department, they apply for them. So we've applied, I think we currently have 3 COP grants, and then there's CTASC grants through DOJ to support our administration, our hire more officers, our equipment. We do not have economic development. A lot of the tribes, their hands are tied for economic development, so we completely depend on federal grants. I do know with U.S. Attorney General Barr coming to the state of Alaska in 2019, while he was here visiting, declared a law enforcement emergency for the villages with what he saw. And I know we just had a meeting, I think it was a Monday. I'm on the FBIC just task force team. And with Dan Bonagino, the director of FBI, is continuing to support tribes in the crimes that are occurring in reservations in the lower 48, the drug activity, the cartel trying to get on the reservations and hide, and then we have the drug activity coming to Alaska. So I think we'll continue to have support for law enforcement for the tribes, but I can't say that for other grants with the tribes. But for the criminal and the justice system, I think that will stay because they know it is an emergency.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a question from Representative Moore.
Thank you, Chair Dibert. Through the chair to Chief Anthony, I'm curious where you guys are at in the conversation, and maybe this was covered, there's just been a lot of information here this morning, where you guys are at in the conversation of becoming recognized and where you are at with those, with that process. Sounds like there's been a lot of stumbling blocks here, but what are we doing today, and how does this committee partner with you to have, you know, see some more action? Where can we help?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for just even having me here today. That's very helpful. We are still moving forward. We know we have our tribal criminal codes. We've established that so we can help tribal citizens, but it's misdemeanor level, right? We are taking criminal cases, but at a misdemeanor level. If it's higher than that, right now, Department of Law is working with us, Ann Bruno. She's been a great help, and then trying to work with us with our cases, if it's in Fairbanks, introducing us to the DA there and trying to get the case through. So those are the processes we're working through right now, just taking it longer than what it should be if we had our state commission. We are also having a meeting with BIA We are asking for a special law enforcement commission through BIA so we can work our federal cases and turn them into the U.S. Attorney's Office. Because if we have somebody who is a sex offender and he's a habitual sex offender, I would not charge them state. I would charge them through the U.S. Attorney's Office for more charges. If I have somebody who's a known drug dealer, I'm not going to charge them through the state. I'm going to go to the U.S. Attorney's Office. So depending on the nature of the case. So this is what we are currently working with BIA. They are coming up in June for 5 days to do an inspection on our site to see if we can get our commission.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's a great question. I know in a future meeting here in Tribal Affairs, we will be having a discussion with Commissioner Cockrell, who might be able to help us with some of these ways that we could partner with and help with tribal police. Any more questions for Chief Anthony and all of her work with the Tribal Police Department? It's very exciting. Yeah, it's very exciting to, this is all new to me too, in learning about Tribal Police Department. And I know I still have a lot to learn in this. And I know that our committee is willing to help in any way. And I guess we don't have any more questions or comments, Chief Anthony. If you have any last words or final comment?
Yes, ma'am. First of all, thank you all for listening. It means a lot to the tribe. I would like to invite you to come to Chicklin, come ride with the officers, come see what we are doing. We are an open book, and thank you.
Wonderful. That would be a really great field trip for sure, that the committee could be a part of, something that my staff and I could look into and definitely connect with you on. And I also want to give a moment. We have some folks online. Rick Haskins Garcia, thank you for popping in there for a minute. Do you have any final words on Tribal Police Department?
Thank you, Chair, and to the committee as well. I want to echo Donna's, you know, sentiments and thanks. I think over the last 2 weeks, having this time in front of the Tribal Affairs, discussing what tribal public safety and tribal justice in Alaska looks like is super important. And we really am so grateful for the opportunity to share this with you and with the committee.
Thank you so much for that, Rick. And then I know we didn't get a chance to talk with Philip Ling. If you're online, if you could put your name on the record and state your affiliation, if you have any final comments to help us here on the Tribal Affairs Committee.
Philip Ling, I'm the Traditional Tribal Court Director for Chicklin Village, and I also serve on the council, and it's a broken record, but I just want to also echo Donna and Rick's comments on thank you for even just taking this hour to hear what we're doing in justice and public safety. It means a lot to us, and you know, we're excited to keep pushing as hard as we can to move forward tribal justice and public safety.
Wonderful. Thank you, all of you, for your time and for the great presentation. And the slideshow is very helpful. And please send us, any other slides or information to our staff, and we'll get it out to the team. Anna Bassi, thank you for your good work out there and for keeping Alaskans as safe as possible. Anna Bassi, and we're going to go ahead and take a brief at ease as we get ready for our next agenda item. Brief at ease. Okay, next up, we will be taking up House Bill 59, State Tribal Education Compacts. We will start by asking Dr. Joel Isaac if he has any opening comments. I believe he is online, about the bill before we turn to public testimony. I also want to state that Dr. Bishop is online as well to help us with any other questions and probably an opening statement as well. Dr. Isaac, if you can hear us, please state your name and your affiliation for the record, and please begin with your opening comments.
Jan, thank you. Dr. Joel Isaac, for the record, a consultant to the Department of Education and Early Development. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak briefly with you this morning and the time on the topic of tribal education compacting. I just want to do a very brief high-level overview again to position the committee. What we're looking at with the State Tribal Education Compacting Bill is to create a pathway for tribes to operate public schools in Alaska, just like any other public school, that the tribe would be functioning as a school district using a proven model and modeling after what the EDGECOM uses right now for that functioning as a school district. The tribe would function in that way and hire staff to carry out educational services. The schools would be have open enrollment and be public schools, follow the state constitution, all the same reporting requirements that existing school districts have to provide. The significant way to improve or increase student learning and outcomes with the tribal education model is addressed through tribes being able to have more direction in how they train staff, so specifically the teachers. And that we've also had almost 10 years of public engagement through Open Meetings Act meetings, whether that's the legislature, the state board meeting, the Alaska Education Challenge. And so those are my comments for opening before I pass it over to the commissioner for her opening remarks. And I just, again, want to appreciate the committee for the time on this bill and for the tribal partners. This was not done in isolation. This was done with a strong support from our tribal partners in drafting the report that is now reflected in the bill that's before the committee. Janann, please.
Anabasi, thank you, Dr. Isaac, for your words. It's great to hear from you. And thank you for all your work on this bill. Dr. Bishop, if you could hear me, if you could state your name and affiliation. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is with honor that I speak to you today. My name is Dina Bishop, the Commissioner of Education for the Department of Education and Early Development. And I want to couch HB 59 in its existence and its push for this very important legislation. In 2016, through the Alaska Challenge, with over 15,000 pieces of input and communication from Alaskans around our state, as well as 300 Alaskan stakeholders who took place personally in Alaska's challenge in deciding what is important for Alaska's education, tribal compacting was one of the top five ways and manners to improve public education in the state of Alaska. Again, in 2022, the governor's education priorities also had tribal compacting paramount to the success of Alaska's public schools. Additionally, Senate Bill 34, led by Senator Stevens, set tribal compacting and a demonstration program to see if this innovative idea could work, set this work into action. Again, Alaskans have spoken, our legislature has spoken, and our governor. I understand that due to extenuating circumstances, this final testimony has led us with only 30 days left in session. But I urge this committee, as well as all the legislative committees, to please seriously look at this bill, see that it is an important program full of innovation and excitement that will serve Alaska's students, both Alaska Native as well as non-Native, for an innovative, culturally grounded program for public education. I'm excited for this, and I just urge you let us know any outstanding questions. We've been ready and available, and just I am just thrilled and excited for this to move forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bishop, for your words and opening comments. And just for the committee members, we also have Heather Heineken online, who is Director of Finance and Support, to help us with any finance questions that might come up this morning. Okay, so next up, we will begin by taking up House Bill 59, State Tribal Education. We will now open up House Bill 59 for public testimony. We have quite a few people online and in the room to testify on House Bill 59. So I'm going to limit testifiers to 3 minutes each. We will have a timer set. So please keep that in mind when it is your turn to speak on the bill. First off, it looks like we do have some folks in the room to testify. We have a sign-up sheet. And if we can invite Tristan Duvall to come up. I'm sorry to mispronounce name. Please come forward, state your name and affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Through the chair, Dinamase is my Thinkit name. Tristan Duvall is my English name. I'm Eagle from the Shonkwidi clan. It's good to see you all. I'm a special projects manager here in Juneau at Tlingit and Haida. I first want to say Gurshish Anabasi, thank you to Chair Dibert and members of the committee for this opportunity to provide public testimony on HB 59, State Tribal Education Compact Schools. I'm here this morning to speak in strong support of HB 59, a bill that I've been following throughout this entire legislative session. I'm a proud tribal citizen of Tlingit and Haida and Craig Tribal Association, a graduate of Craig High School on Prince of Wales Island, and a former school board member of the Craig City School District Board of Education, where I was honored to serve as the youngest member in the district's history from 2019 to 2022. I've dedicated my recent career to advancing tribal self-determination, whether as a Biden presidential appointee supporting tribes across the country when I lived in Washington, D.C., or now through Tlingit and Haida and the Indigenous Stewardship Program, which includes implementing the first co-stewardship agreement with the United States Forest Service from the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area. Across every role, I've seen where these cross-sector and cross-organization partnerships can thrive, but I've also seen the limits of partnerships where tribes are invited only to advise, but not to decide. Tribes continue to prove time and time again that when we lead, outcomes improve. In land management, in healthcare, in child welfare, but in education, tribes are still waiting for that same recognition and opportunity. HB 59 is how we move from consultation to governance, from being partners at the table to being co-authors of the system itself. It's how the state of Alaska can ensure that public schools reflect the cultures, values, and strengths of Alaska Native communities, because tribes will be the ones delivering and evaluating that education. I urge you to support HB 59. This isn't just policy. It's a promise to future generations that Alaska trusts its first peoples to lead in educating Alaska's children within a public system that serves everyone. Gunashish, Anabasi, thank you.
Anabasi, thank you so much for that. Are there any comments from the committee members for Tristan? I appreciate your words. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your story. Anabasi. Next up in the room, if Misha Jackson could come, is she in the room? Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to Tribal Affairs and for being here. Please state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Through the chair, my name is Misha Jackson. I work for Tlingit and Haida as a tribal education liaison. I'm actually here, you guys have heard me speak a few times. I'm actually here because my husband asked me to speak his written testimony. He's going to email out loud because he thinks it's important for people to hear his experiences and have them on the record. So this is from my husband. Madam Chair Dibert and members of the House Tribal Affairs Committee, my name is Joshua Jackson. I've been a certified teacher in the Juneau School District for 17 years, and I currently teach in the K-1 classroom in the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy Program at Harborview Elementary, where I've been teaching for the past 10 years. I am a proud, longtime Indigenous educator in the district, one of only a few still teaching, and I am writing in strong support of HB 59. At TCLL, our students, most of whom are Alaska Native, thrive when learning in an environment that reflects their identity and builds on their strengths. This success doesn't happen by chance. It takes unwavering dedication from our staff to create and protect that space within a system that wasn't built for us. Over the last 10 years, what TCLL has offered me as an Indigenous educator is a loving and caring staff that knows what it takes to support each other and our families. We create our own community that feeds off the strength and balance of our clans, villages, and our values, and it works. Our students, our families, and our staff thrive when they see themselves reflected in the education system. But here's the reality. Despite the successes of TCLL, it remains just a program. We lack autonomy, we share a building, we share services, and too often our students miss out. Whether it's because of late buses, limited access to teachers' specials, or after-school activities that don't align with our schedule, every year we are advocating for something new and trying to be heard. The time has come. Ut kuahu. It's time for education to be put back in the hands of our people. We know what works for our students and our communities. Our tribes know what works for our families and our communities. HB 59 creates that opportunity. Tribes aren't asking for special treatment. They're asking for the authority to lead, to design public schools where culture, language, and community are the foundation, not the add-on you have to advocate for. I'll leave you with this. Every year, my TCLL K-1 class has a wait list. Every year, we turn away families because there isn't enough space. HB 59 would open doors across Alaska, giving families real choices and greater access to culturally grounded tribal schools committed to student success. I urge you to support and advance HB 59 without delay. G'lich'ish.
Anabasi, for sharing your husband's message this morning. Tell him Anabasi for me. And are there any comments from or questions for the testifier? I guess I would just like to add to that. I really like your husband's words of reflect on our identity. You know, when we see a teacher that looks like us, it's very important. And it just reminds me when I was in, I think, second grade, I really wanted this one teacher who was a Inupiaq because there weren't very many teachers that looked like me. And I didn't get to have her, but at least I got to see her in the hall and have some kind of connection. So tell your husband thank you so much. And Representative Burke.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say I appreciate his testimony as well, and you for coming back. And I'm excited to hear the rest of the public testimony. My grandmother taught Inupiaq language for 41 years. Ooh. And before passing, and I feel very fortunate that my own children, while I'm here, are a part of an immersion program in kindergarten and K-4, where they're learning Inupiaq and receive 2,100 minutes a week of immersion. So I know how important it is to have that cultural identity, to see yourself. That's why I'm here. I saw somebody who looked like me in a position, and I was like, hey, I can do that. So that representation really matters. So clear notebook.
Yeah. Representative Moore.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for being here many times this session. Your dedication to the cause and to what we are, you know, immersed in here right now. And I just honor you for continuing to come and continuing to pour out your heart and what's important to you and making it important to us. So thank you so much for being here.
Anabasi, for your testimony. And we have another in-room testifier. I'm going to try to say this name correctly. Please correct me. Mikeline Jackson, a student, and it says from Juneau, Alaska. So please come forward. Good morning. And I say Dawinta, welcome, in Kwekan Athabascan. Thank you for being here. And please state your name and begin your testimony.
Through the chair, my name is Mikeline Jackson. My Tlingit name is Kue. I am Shungu Katie. I am in sixth grade. I live in Juneau, Alaska, and I go to TCLL at Harborview Elementary. Madam Chair and House Tribal Affairs Committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of HB 59. I support HB 59 because I have been able to go to school in a program designed by Tlingit teachers. TCLL is different than most schools because we learn Tlingit language, are told oral narratives, we sing Tlingit songs and Tlingit dance, we do whole program weekly Monday morning meetings, have elders in our classrooms every day, and do many whole program events. I support HB 59 because I have been able to go to school to... and learn Thinkit for the past 7 years. I am lucky for the opportunity, but me and my friends still would like to see more. My little sister got to go to the language nest that is run by Dash, Ginny, Costine, Nock, and Yetutin at Thinkit and Haida. She got to learn Thinkit all day. They only spoke Thinkit at the nest. That is what I would like to do in my own learning in school. Speak only Thinkit. I know tribes would work hard to make this happen and listen to what kids and families want. HB 59 would allow our tribes to run our own schools, and it would give us more educational options. It would also give us more space. Right now, we are crammed into an elementary school, and some of my classmates are taller than some teachers. And it would give us and our families a stronger voice. Please support HB 59. Gunalchish.
Anabasi, Michaelin, thank you for your testimony. Are there any comments or questions for our testifier? Representative Schwanke.
Michaelin, I just wanted to say thank you for coming. It's very brave of you to come, and we love to hear from students all the time.
That's a great way to be part of democracy. Thank you for being here. And I just want to add a comment, too, that, you know, when I was your age, I do wish that I could learn Khoikhoi Athabaskan in my schools from my teachers, and I know how important that is. And just thank you for your testimony, and thank you for being here. Anabasi. And we have more in-room testifiers. If we have Jody Gotti, please forgive me if I stated the name wrong. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and state your affiliation, and begin your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jody Gotti. Just a moment while I pull it up. My name is Jody Gotti, and I'm a proud tribal citizen of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. I'm testifying today in strong support of HB 59. I'm also the mother of two young tribal citizens. My 5-year-old son, Charlie, has attended Hayukatungi Kuti, a Tlingit immersion program administered by Tlingit and Haida for the past 2 years. He will graduate next month and begin kindergarten in the fall. 3 days a week, he's immersed in the Tlingit language, the language of this land. The learning environment is priceless and made possible by the dedication and passion of his teachers. These teachers spend immense amounts of time working with our elders, translating curriculum, adapting lesson plans, and ensuring the instruction is not only academically rigorous, but also linguistically and culturally accurate. They translate regular preschool curriculum into the Tlingit language, so he's learning the curriculum as the rest of his peers are in Tlingit. That's no small task. It creates an environment that's intellectually rich, a place where he feels seen, supported, and celebrated. One of the most moving things I've experienced as a parent is watching my son read books to my mother, his grandmother, in our language. She was a part of a generation that didn't have the chance to hear our language in her home as a child. A direct result of the boarding school era and forced assimilation policies. Now her grandson is teaching her. This is what generational healing looks like. Excuse me. In contrast, I remember starting kindergarten in Ketchikan and experiencing racism for the first time at the age of 5. No one was speaking our language. Aside from the Johnson O'Malley program, there were no cultural components to education. HB 59 offers a different path for our future. This is a path rooted in self-determination and intergenerational healing. This compact recognizes that tribes know what our children need to succeed. Please support HB 59. And finally, for the skeptics, the question of whether the tribes are ready to provide education is not the right question, because we are already doing it. And in many ways, we're doing it better, because it's rooted in who our children are. The real question now is whether the school district is ready to receive students who are coming from such a strong, culturally grounded foundation. Thank you.
Anna Bassi, thank you for being here and sharing your story and testimony with us. Are there any comments or thoughts from the committee? I really appreciate your comment on elders and just how important. You know, I'm a teacher of 22 years, and it's, as a teacher, I'd always invite elders into the classroom just to be among children, and there's nothing better than like seeing the interactions between elders and kids and just the learning that happens and the joy like on both ends. So I really appreciate your comments on that.
Thank you.
And hopefully this bill will address.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. So next, I guess, first off, is there anyone else in the room that would like to come forward and testify on House Bill 59 in the room? Okay. All right. So with that, I do believe we have some folks online. Okay. So... we have some folks online. So if Santa Roach is online, if you could hear us, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chair Dibert and members of the committee. Santa Hamilton Roach, the Israel. My name is Santa Hamilton Roach, and I'm representing myself. I live and work in my hometown of Shagluk as a professor at UAS in Alaska Native Studies and Rural Development. I'm a former teacher of 10 years, having taught K through 12th grade in Shagluk, and currently I serve on the Shagluk Native Village Tribe. And I served 12 years on our regional corporation board, Doyon Limited, and its sister nonprofit organization, Doyon Foundation. So just let's start by getting a little clear picture of today's context: traditional education, cultural identity, connection to land and place, and our way of being. These have become piecemeal integrated into some schools in Alaska, some and not all. Some boards prioritize cultural education, but it really depends on the leadership and funding streams. And as we know, those variables come and go. We also know local communities have for many, many years desired more for our students by way of cultural education and cultural standards integration. Some districts, Alaska Native educators more so, have done amazing work in Indigenous education frameworks and language immersion. However, I feel we've only scratched the surface of this work as a state, and again, it depends on the place, the administrative leadership, funding, and really the pushers behind the scenes, Alaska Native people doing a lot of that work. Tribally compacted public schools is a model of fundamentally true local control, and isn't that the state of Alaska's core philosophy? The REA schools model, and as I've been doing my own research, if you recall, the state-operated school systems, quote-unquote SOS, and I don't know who would come up with an acronym like that, if anyone remembers that, touted and prioritized local control. And there are challenges with how we measure local control or see the outcomes of local control when the premise of the work is originated by the state. And I know I'm not the first to inform you that this structure is flawed. We have yet to produce outcomes that are sustainable, that grow our own, keep and retain local teachers and administrators, And yes, there are pockets of effective tribal relationships and models. We do know that when we leverage resources at the local level, put control into the hands of local people, families, and leadership, that those outcomes are and can be and will be some of the best work. As a mom and as a former teacher and as a learner, as an Alaska Native person and tribal member, I look forward to reaffirming our role as the children's first educators and teachers, that we, knowing their strengths, their amazing gifts, can reclaim control of our education system in partnership through a compact with the state of Alaska. And what we are doing is utilizing one of our strongest mechanisms of governance at a tribal level to do this. One of our fundamental rights as a sovereign nation is to educate our children. And I look forward to a future where my children receive the best education from the best teachers through a model and framework that produces the best outcomes of success we see for our children. So let's get this passed. Let's work together in partnership. Pastor Gittison, grateful for your time. Thank you.
Anna Bassi, Santa Hamilton Roach, thank you for your testimony. If we have Jessica Ulrich online, if you could hear us, state your name and begin your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Jessica Sunnyguk Ulrich, and I'm a tribal citizen of Nome Eskimo community, and I represent myself. I'm currently an assistant professor of research at Washington State University at the Institute for Research and Education to Advance Community Health. As a researcher, I study what supports Indigenous child, family, community, and intergenerational well-being. And one of the exciting projects I've been working on with Nome Eskimo community is a microcosm for what we hope will come to fruition in the tribal education compact schools on a larger scale. We brought elders, parents, and children of all ages together last fall to pilot weekend wellness workshops in Anchorage and Nome. The goal is to share traditional knowledge and promote connectedness through land-based cultural and subsistence activities. The result of this multi-generational education effort was everything we hoped it to be. One 18-year-old felt more grounded in her identity as an Inupiaq person, and I'll never forget witnessing an elder have tears of gratitude as he expressed how he'd struggled with stepping into his role as an elder. His family experienced a lot of boarding school trauma, which fragmented a lot of traditional knowledge, but he realized that as he shared this knowledge with younger generations that he does have much to give and to offer. Our sacred children, elders, families, and communities need an educational experience that aligns with Indigenous ways of knowing and being, because this is what sustained the health of a collective for generations. These tribal schools are going to teach language, reading, writing, math, science, and history in a way that helps children know who they are and where they come from, so that they feel that love for their ancestors, their family, their community, this earth, and themselves. As one of my elders, Richard A. Tuck, said, we need old-time solutions using modern-day tools. These tribal schools have the potential to honor the local Indigenous brilliance of the lands they are upon in this way and provide a model for the entire state and potentially the country. House Bill 59 is worth the investment because tribal schools can provide an education process that stops the trauma and promotes multiple levels of well-being. As a researcher, I'd love to help the tribes show what we already know to be true about this approach to education. I'm currently working on a $3.5 million transformative research grant proposal funded by the Spencer Foundation, and one of our aims is to develop Indigenous education assessment measures that the tribal schools may take interest in using. Overall, it's time to realign education with the wisdom of our ancestors for the benefit of all children and future generations. And I really hope we see the passage of this important legislation this session. Anna, thank you.
Anna Bassi, Jessica Ulrich, thank you for your testimony and sharing your story with the committee. Next up is Reed Magdans. If you could state your name, hear us, and your affiliation, begin your testimony.
Hello, this is Reed Magdans. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Reed Magdans. I wear a variety of hats at home, so I want to be clear that I'm just speaking on behalf of myself today. Madam Chair and members of the House Tribal Affairs Committee, thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony today in support of HB 59 relating to state tribal education compact schools. First, a little about me. I'm a lifelong Alaskan and a product of the Alaska public school system. I graduated from Cottonview High School. I was raised in Cottonview, and I still live there today. I've followed the process of tribal compacting since it was first discussed as part of Alaska's education challenge, and have attended a number of the public events Steed has hosted over the years. I want to focus my testimony today on a topic that has been much discussed in the legislature in recent years, and that's student achievement. To me, HB 59 represents the best shot currently before the legislature to make meaningful, lasting gains in student achievement. Why do I say that? For one, the words of Alaskans themselves. Every study I've looked at, there are a lot going back decades, that ask Alaska community members, elders, and teachers about how they improve student outcomes, particularly in rural Alaska. All those studies have said basically the same thing. Make the schools reflect the students and the community. Connect what happens outside of school to what is happening in the school. And research shows that when you do that, student outcomes improve. For another, my own personal experience in a rural Alaska high school. I know the kids I went to school with. I knew them in school, and I still know many of them now. Some were high performers, quote unquote, doing well on tests and behaving well in school, but many were not. What has motivated me to pay attention to education policy in the years since I graduated is that most of my classmates who struggled in school didn't struggle from lack of brains or even lack of quality teachers, so that could be a challenge at times. What I observed was lack of motivation, a question students had of why does this matter, and a lack of community, the sense that for too many students, what happened in their classroom was a separate world from what happened in their families and their villages. Tribal compacting holds more promise than any effort I've seen recently to change this reality. Last, I support my statement that this bill represents one of our best efforts at improving student outcomes because it demonstrated success. We have a tribal school here in Cottonview. It's an Inupiaq immersion school teaching a curriculum grounded in the local culture with all local teachers. It's operated for over 20 years. The students that come out of that school are celebrated not just for their Inupiaq language and cultural skills, but for the way they model respectful behavior and leadership. That's the promise of tribal compacting, to produce students and future leaders who are not just skilled academically, but model the best of our next generation. This bill is the product of real discussion between communities, educators, tribes, and the state. Strikes the right balance of maintaining the state's constitutional responsibility for public education while giving tribes a real shot to do something meaningfully different, with the possibility of meaningfully better outcomes for our students over the long term. Thank you for your time. I urge your support for HB 59, and if there are any questions about my testimony, I'll do my best to answer them. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Reed, for your testimony. We might have a few minutes. Are there any questions from the committee for Reed? We have one from Representative Burke.
Thank you, Reed, through the chair. I don't have any questions. I just wanted to say thank you, and it's great to hear a familiar voice. Thank you for your public testimony, and I couldn't agree more.
Thank you, Representative Burke. Anna Bassi, Reed. Thank you for being here this morning. We have Alicia Marriott online. If you could hear us, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair Dibert and members of the House Tribal Affairs Committee. My name is Alicia Marriott. My Tlingit name is Ukukani. I'm a tribal citizen of the Stalo Coast Salish community, Union Barband, and Tlingit, Kagwantan, and a child of the Lukahadi. My mother's people originate from Hope, British Columbia, and my father's people originate from Haines. I'm the current president of Alaska Native Sisterhood Camp 70, Juneau. And in my day job, I'm a Johnson O'Malley Education Counselor at Yakuske Dakihiri Alternative High School here in Juneau. Today, I'm calling on behalf of Alaska Native Sisterhood. As you are all likely familiar, our organization has been advocating for land claims, health care, education, assistance, and to civil rights of all since 1915. I'm calling in with strong support of House Bill 59, which would authorize the establishment of state tribal education contacts in Alaska. And this bill represents an important opportunity to honor tribal sovereignty, invest in our children, and reshape public education to reflect the rich cultures and values of Alaska Native communities. For decades, Alaska tribes have contacted successfully in areas like healthcare and child welfare. Education should be no exception. HB 59 provides a path for tribes to operate public schools that are grounded in local priorities, governed with community oversight, and guided by traditional knowledge and cultural relevance. These are not private or charter schools. They are public institutions that will follow the same funding and accountability structures as other schools while centering Indigenous voices and leadership. Alaska Native students represent nearly 30% of our state's K-12 population. Yet the current system continues to fall short in meeting their educational needs. As a 12-year educator, I've seen my students beam with pride when they are able to see themselves in the curriculum, connect with the content, and when they can share the strengths of their communities and peers because their academics reflect the land and people in which they live. State tribal education contacting is a way forward to ensure students see themselves reflected in their curriculum, are taught in their languages, and are supported by educators who understand their histories and strengths. The pilot program proposed under HB 59 builds on years of collaboration between the Department of Education and Early Development, Alaska Native organizations, and tribal governments. It's the result of thoughtful research, consultation, and commitment, and it's time to take the next step. I urge you to support House Bill 59 and affirm the state of Alaska's commitment to educational equity, tribal self-determination, and the future of our youth. Finish for your leadership and service to our community.
Thank you, Anabasi, Alicia. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Emily Roseberry. If you could hear us, please state your name and affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, my name is Emily Roseberry. I'm speaking on behalf of myself today. I am a former educator, a former science teacher, a former principal, former administrator, and also a co-founder of Cudahy Academy Charter School, which is now Cudahy Academy Tribal School. I just want to share that, and I'm speaking from my heart today, and just to share how important it is for our people, and I'm Jeff, and from Barrow, and today I call in from Anchorage, and I want to share how important it is for our students to be rooted and grounded in their identities as Inupiaq, know their heritage, to be involved in their culture, because this sets the foundation of learning for our people. You know, as an educator, I've seen at multiple levels of how, you know, the public education system has worked with our students. And it's no surprise that we have such low outcomes for our students. And the primary reason that I can see is that our local people are not involved in the actual direct teaching of our children. And it makes a huge difference for our own local community members to be a part of the education of our students, to have that support that only community members can provide to their own children. And so with that in mind, you know, I'm just really proud to know that Cudahy Academy Tribal School today, it has been participating as one of the tribal schools with the Tribal Education Compact. And to know that the results,
you know, of our students in their learning and their progress has been really wonderful to see. This has been a program that many of our people over the years have cried out for, you know. So this particular system that has been put in place for Hadidi Academy Tribal School is different, vastly different from our traditional public school system. And it may have pushback because we have local people as our teachers, and but they see our students differently than an outside teacher coming into communities. So a lot of, you know, teachers that do come in, this is their occupation, this is what they do. And our local teachers that are teaching, they're doing this because they love our students. They want to see progress. They want to see our students succeed. And that comes from their heart. And students know the difference. And so there is so much progress and so much building up of the student identities that does not happen in a regular traditional school. So all in all, I want to say, you know, I really hope that House Bill 59, you know, passes. You know, I heard,
Emily,
you know, through all the public testimony,
Emily,
the importance of...
Emily, can you wrap up your comments, the three-minute testimony?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. I was just sharing that, you know, I heard so much of the other public testimonies about how important it is to have a new method, a different method. And I believe that the state tribal compact for education is a strong method for our local people, for our rural communities to thrive in education. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Emily, for your words and in your testimony this morning. If you would like to add additional comments, please email our committee at house.tribal.affairs@akledge.gov. Next up, I would like to go to the Fairbanks LIO, my hometown, and it looks like we have Wayne Woodgate online. If you could state your name and your affiliation, and please begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair. It is a beautiful day here in Fairbanks. Also, good morning, members of the House Tribal Affairs Committee. My name is Wayne Woodgate. I'm the Federal Programs Director of Upiat School District, serving the communities of Agiachuk, Akiak, and Tuluksak, and I'm here to support House Bill 59. This bill holds significance for the future of education for our children. For generations, the educational landscape has often fallen short in recognizing and honoring the distinct cultural heritages, languages, and ways of knowing that are intrinsic to our indigenous communities. House Bill 59 offers a vital opportunity to reshape this landscape by empowering tribes to exercise greater educational sovereignty. The establishment of state tribal education compacts is not merely a procedural change. It's a recognition of the inherent rights of tribes to self-determination, particularly in matters concerning the upbringing and education of tribal youth. By allowing tribes to enter into direct agreements with the state, this legislation paves the way for the development of educational models that are truly community-driven and culturally responsive. This means curricula infused with Alaska Native languages and traditions, pedagogies that resonate with indigenous learning styles, and ultimately an educational experience that fosters a stronger sense of identity, belonging, and academic success for Alaska Native students. Furthermore, this bill fosters innovation within our education system. By empowering tribes with autonomy to design and implement Alaska Native educational programs, we unlock the potential for creative and effective approaches that may differ significantly from the one-size-fits-all model that has often prevailed.
This localized control ensures that educational priorities are aligned with specific needs and aspirations of each participating tribal community. Now, as you deliberate on this crucial legislation, I urge you to consider the profound impact it will have on the lives of Alaska Native children and the strengthening of tribal self-governance. While I support the overall intent of accountability, I also respectfully request that Section 6 regarding reporting to the state be carefully reviewed. It's paramount that Alaska Native tribal children are not simply data points, but rather that tribal education leaders are active partners in defining and measuring educational success within their own unique cultural contexts. Allowing tribes to set the parameters of success ensures that the evaluation is meaningful and reflects the distinct educational philosophies and goals. House Bill 59 is an investment in the future of Alaska. It's an affirmation of tribal sovereignty in education and a commitment to providing Alaska Native students with culturally rich and relevant education they deserve. I implore you to support this landmark legislation. Thank you for your time and earnest and consideration. I'm available for any questions if you have any.
Anabasi Wayne, thank you for your testimony. And it's nice to hear that Fairbanks is bright and sunny still. I got to go home last weekend, and it was just springtime in Fairbanks is just beautiful. And I just have a comment before I go to the committee. I really appreciate your words on Indigenous learning styles. As an educator, I really try to hit my students as learning styles, and I never thought of Indigenous learning styles. But when I think about that phrase, I just think about how, you know, Alaska Native youth learn by watching your elders, by watching your parents, and then by doing. And that's just, I think, you know, that we should include that in our schools. And I really appreciate your words on that. Is there any other comments from the committee? We have a comment or question from Representative Carrick.
Just wanted to say Anabasi to all of our testifiers today, and especially our student in the room who testified. I think that's probably always the most powerful testimony, is to hear directly from students who are impacted or who have worked with students. And thank you to all the folks online as well who have called in. Really looking forward to continuing to work on this legislation and see it moving forward. I think that there can be no question from just the testimony we've heard today about the benefit to tribes and tribal members from this type of compact, and so I'm just looking forward to continuing to work on it and figure out those details. And thank you all for testifying today.
Anabasi, Representative Carrick, for your words. And I will do one more check in the room. If there is anyone else in the room who would like to testify on House Bill 59, now is the time to let me know. I just thank you all that did show up and testify. Your words are very meaningful in this piece of legislation. Seeing no more individuals wishing to testify, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony on House Bill 59. So now I'll turn to committee members. Well, if you'd like to, actually, let's hear from Dr. Isaac first. Dr. Isaac, if you're online, if you would like to do any wrap-up comments, that would be great.
Jan, to the chair, Joel Isaac, for the record, I appreciate the opportunity once again to speak with you on tribal compacting, and I think the testifiers today really show a good example of why this is needed and the kind of outcomes we can see. I also want to express my gratitude to the students. They're living this, and our parents and families that are living this, and the opportunities that they're excited for, I think there's no better way to describe what's possible than what they've shared today. I believe that this bill before you has the technical ingredients to make that possible. And I think this is a very exciting time for education. the way that we've talked about this with the tribal partners is this is an invitation for you as the legislature, for the members of the public, families across our state of Alaska to work together and partner on a really exciting opportunity for our students to increase their educational opportunity. So this is, as we talk to the tribal community, it's a roll up your sleeves and do the work alongside us. And I think that this bill provides the avenue for us to work together. So any questions, I'm happy to follow up with. But again, the appreciation for this and the amount of public comments and interest for this bill, I think, is very clear. And I hope that we're able to have this bill move forward quickly. And it's good to see you all today. Shanae, thank you.
Anabasi, thank you for your words and wish you could be here in person, but it's good to hear your voice online, Dr. Isaac. And I guess I would just like to say that I just kind of like to bring my grandma into this space. My grandmother was Cecilia Johnson from the village of Cochrane's. And, you know, she would be very, very proud today that we are passing a bill like this, where we have language and culture and celebration of who we are as Alaska Native people. And with that, are there any other comments? That completes the agenda for our Tribal Affairs Committee meeting. I'm going to set House Bill 59 aside and set an amendment deadline for the bill to tomorrow, Wednesday, April. Next Wednesday, April 30th at noon. I'm speeding through. please submit any amendments to my office by then. So the amendment deadline for House Bill 59 is Wednesday, April 30th at noon. Wrap up. That completes the agenda for our Tribal Affairs Committee meeting. Next week on Tuesday, we'll be hearing from Commissioner Cockrell from the Department of Public Safety. On Thursday, we'll be taking House Bill 59 back up for the purpose of taking up any amendments and final questions for the bill sponsors. And we have been joined by Representative Story. Yes, before we close, do you have any questions or final comments?
Thank you. And again, my apologies. I had one of my bills up in Community and Regional Affairs, and so I had to seize the opportunity to go, and it was on housing, actually, so very important. But I will make a point of listening to the testimony this morning. That's one of the wonderful things about taping things. And so thanks to everyone. I'm sorry I couldn't be in here in person to hear it.
Anabasi, Representative Story. Okay. Any other final comments? Okay. That wraps up Tribal Affairs this morning. The time is 9:49 a.m., and the hearing of Tribal Affairs is now adjourned.